This is a Discover episode where we learn about the daunting world of finances. In this episode, we'll start discovering the world of blockchain with NFTs, non-fungible tokens. Dasen Trisisi is our guest for this Discover episode. She will explain all about her professional experience with blockchain, which involves being an NFT curator in a blockchain-based art gallery. Damn girl! And for the ones who like controversy, her community burned a Picasso. Yes, the painting burned with fire and turned it into an NFT, not to destroy it, but to bring the Picasso painting into an immortal metaverse. Ready?
This is the Say Yes to Fire Show. And now, join the conversation with Susanna Say Yes as she takes you on a mind-opening journey into the daunting world of financial independence and retiring early. We interview guests. We talk about stocks, crypto, and more. Streaming to the world and beyond. Your Mondays will never be the same. Ready? 3, 2, 1. Fire.
Hola, say yes to fire. Welcome back to the Financial Diaries of this Millennial. We are happy to be here today, one step farther to our financial independence and retiring early. Remember, let's work smarter, not harder. Quick note, this is free financial education, not financial advice. Oh, don't forget to follow Say Yes to Fire on Instagram
and Twitter.
Let's dive right in. Before we welcome Dasen Trisisi, let me explain on a very high level how the blockchain technology works, just to make sure you can successfully follow this exciting episode and you yourself get excited about the crypto world and its foundation technology. Quick note, there is already an entire Get Skilled episode on the makings focused on understanding blockchain technology. Why am I preparing this? Well, do you invest in crypto? Like, for real? Or do you want to invest in crypto and take it seriously, same as with your stocks? Then I believe it's very important to understand what makes a crypto asset so vanguard and especially valuable as to invest in them. To be clear, when I talk about blockchain, I'm not talking about Bitcoin. I'm talking about the underlying digital foundation that supports applications such as Bitcoin. But the reaches of the blockchain are extending far beyond Bitcoin. So, blockchain technology, what is that? Blockchain owes its name to the way it stores transaction data in blocks that are linked together to form a chain. As the number of transactions grows, so does the blockchain. Blocks record and confirm the time and sequence of the transactions, which are then locked into the blockchain within a discrete network that is governed by rules agreed on by the network participants. In simple words, the blockchain contains verified proof of transactions. How? A ledger is a system of record used to store bookkeeping entries and the single source of truth. The single source of truth is achieved by a consensus mechanism, which varies from blockchain to blockchain. Bitcoin has a consensus mechanism called proof of work, and Ethereum, for example, is moving into a consensus mechanism called proof of stake. I will explain this in detail in the next Get Skilled episode about blockchain technology. But for now, let's focus on why blockchain is important and why you should care. Okay, so businesses run on information. The faster it's received and the more accurate it is, the better. Blockchain is ideal for delivering that information because it provides immediate, shared, and completely transparent information stored on an immutable ledger that can be accessed only by permissioned network members. A blockchain network can track orders, payments, accounts, production, and much more. And because members share a single view of the truth, you can see all details of a transaction end to end, giving you greater confidence as well as new efficiencies and opportunities. Before we welcome Dasen Trisisi, and if you're new to this podcast, I just want to make sure you know that you can go to this show website, sayyesofire.com, and find all about the FIRE movement, which stands for Financial Independence and Retiring Early. In the website sayyesofire.com, you can find money and financial tools that you can apply to your personal finances. And what's more, you can find out about your financial personality. Do you know what your financial personality is? I believe this is extremely important if you want to get personalized advice and if you want to know the exact steps to make your money work for you. So don't forget, go to sayyesofire.com and check it out. So shall we welcome Dasen Trisisi? So, welcome, Decentricity. I'm so happy to have you here because I think you have a lot of good stuff to share with us. But first, can you tell a little bit about yourself and where you're from?
Sure. So, I'm Decentricity. My real name is Pandu Saswaryo. I come from Indonesia, actually. And Indonesia has been quite interesting in terms of the blockchain space and the way blockchain has been developed here. I do a lot of work in the blockchain space. I've been doing it since 2017, although I did do it before when I was working at IBM. So actually, even before 2017, I was already doing blockchain. So I started in sort of the enterprise blockchain space. Left IBM in 2017 because I thought like I wanted to do something that is more agnostic, that is not just focusing on just one technology, but making sure that there's interoperability between the technologies, there's a way for technologies to live together, and we can choose the correct technology for the use case. And that's why me and my friends basically co-founded Blockchain Zoo. So Blockchain Zoo was my first company in the blockchain space. It got quite big in the region. So basically Indonesia and Singapore, Malaysia, we did a lot of projects. And then after Blockchain Zoo, I initiated the Indonesian Blockchain Association, which I still sit on the board. So the Indonesian Blockchain Association is an association of 23 blockchain companies currently. And we're the only association that connects B2B to C, so business to government. We helped initiate basically the legality of cryptocurrencies in Indonesia. So we helped lobby for that. Previously, cryptocurrencies were not legal and it became legal. It basically, there are legal avenues because of that. So that's sort of something that we did. Also sort of more enterprise, basically that's more related to the government side. I've been in the DeFi space personally for a while.
Quick note for our audience here. DeFi means decentralized finance, and it's a space within the crypto blockchain community.
My company, the other company, is Blocksphere, Blocksphere.id, which is a consulting company. I'm an executive advisor there. We initiated a company that is built upon agnosticity. We try to do all of the blockchain technologies, very techy company as well. So it was a natural transition. And I'm also helping out at Unique One Network, the NFT marketplace or group of NFT marketplaces, where I am actually the curator. I'm an NFT curator there. A sort of overall overarching view of everything I do.
I think that's amazing. I think you have a super interesting background and I really admire everything that you're doing for the space. But maybe let's go back a couple of years. Can you tell us how did you discover the blockchain technology itself?
Discovered it when I was doing Second Life. It's a metaverse. Basically, it's a virtual world. It looks like a game. Like if you look at it, it looks like, oh, it's a game. But it's not really a game because there's no goals. We basically are on Second Life to socialize. So it's more of a social network. It's just 3D. You can buy land, you can buy stuff, etc. And this is very early. I was there actually early 2011. That community was already very digital, sort of, and that was like Second Life pre-existed cryptocurrencies. Like before cryptocurrencies existed, there were already like Second Life is already there, and Second Life already had like in-world tokens, in-game tokens. They called it the Linden Dollar. I got introduced to Bitcoin quite early because within the Second Life community, there was a lot of people actually trading the in-world tokens, Second Life Linden, to Bitcoin. And then like a friend of mine is a miner, and back then it was still possible. So I actually even sponsored him to do mining as well. So, but like the first time I saw like a lot of these things, it was actually in these kinds of communities, virtual communities. So I never became a miner myself. I didn't really trade that much, but I did hold on to some Bitcoin at the beginning of it. Bought a car out of it. I've been debt free for my entire life. I've never had huge debts with banks, and that is thanks to like that early Bitcoin. My first job was actually it was a college placement program as a microbiologist assistant. So it's super random, right?
I started as a civil engineer and now I'm completely into finances. So I completely understand the career switch.
And then I went to like several companies first, and then I went into IBM. Now in IBM, I was doing a lot of the hardware stuff. So I was focused on servers, focused on networking. Networking as in like, you know, cables, not networking as in meeting people. I started from that, but because I was interested in Bitcoin and how it worked, I kept telling people around me that you guys should look into this. I became that person, you know, like the person who tells everyone about Bitcoin. But yeah, and then after a few years and like doing that, IBM caught up. Like they did their Hyperledger Fabric thing. They sponsored the Linux Foundation to do it.
Quick note for the audience. Decentricity here mentioned different terms. Hyperledger and Hyperledger Fabric. But what's the difference? The Hyperledger is an open source collaborative effort to create blockchain technology that is suitable for the enterprise, so for businesses. Hyperledger Fabric provides a framework for developing blockchain solutions with a modular architecture, pluggable implementations, and container technology. So basically, in simple words, it's a type of blockchain code that is very suitable for enterprises thanks to its modular architecture. Let's go back.
That is interesting, and I think IBM tried their best. With my philosophy, I think it's not really a fit. Because the way IBM tries to do things, at least back then, I don't know now, but like back then, it looks like they were trying to force Hyperledger Fabric into every use case. Even though actually, in my opinion, I've always had this opinion, you can't really shoehorn everything to one type of blockchain. There will be like multiple blockchains for multiple use cases. And I've always thought that. That's sort of why I got out of IBM and then like started the companies. And that's also why I'm very interested in the way Substrate is doing things. Parity, of course, Polkadot, Kusama, and now the Octopus Network are doing things where they are basically doing, they're a relay chain, and then you can put parachains or app chains on it that connects to them. So each parachain is a separate, entirely separate blockchain, but is interoperable. I think it's really cool. And so anyway, I came from a very techie background. The NFT stuff is also because I like art. I've always liked art. So your viewers, your listeners cannot see this, but like I have a painting on my wall. That is an NFT or, well, it's a physical NFT. So I bought it as an NFT and then they sent the painting to me. And like just to describe for your audience, it is a woman looking at the moon and the title is To the Moon. So anyway, so yeah, that's sort of the art thing is something that's more of a hobby, and then like it mixed nicely with this tech stuff.
So when you went into this let's say world of the blockchain, how did you come across the NFTs?
Funny thing is, back in 2018, my company, and this is Blocksphere, we did NFTs as well for, that was for carbon credits trading. So the technology behind NFTs, especially Ethereum NFTs, I'm quite familiar with because we've been implementing it in multiple projects. I started actually doing it late last year or early this year because, and this relates back to Second Life, I was very interested in crypto voxels, the Ethereum metaverse. I'm really interested in actually owning land there. So I bought land. The price of land shot up, as you probably know. The cool thing about the land in crypto voxels, it has utility. You can put stuff on it. You can walk around and put your art and people can exhibit their art in your building. And if you own the art, there's like a special frame that shows that you own it instead of just like uploading an image. You can do events in world. You can do like concerts. You can even do seminars. There's a ton of stuff in the metaverse that is actually really, really cool. So it started from that. I started buying up NFTs related to metaverses. And in parallel, my community actually developed Unique One Network. Now, the Unique One Network is a network of NFT marketplaces, and it's actually really cool because each marketplace is focused on a different category. So you can have the Unique One Photo category, which is only for photographers. It can be art photography, can be stock photography, any kind of photography there, which means that the governance of each community is focused really on the wishes of that community of creatives. That's sort of the way we're doing it is, I think, really cool. Back at the beginning of the year, it's still small. There's a lot of growth. So I helped the team engage with the community, especially with the artist community, and bringing in and onboarding them. One of the things that is also really cool is that it's a net zero fee platform for artists. So it's free for artists to basically mint on our platform. And it's really, really cool. It's done with a system of rewards when you mint. It's there's a ton of stuff that also goes into the royalties as well. So it's actually the only, I think, NFT marketplace that actually does this. A lot of these digital artists cannot monetize. Like, even if they try to monetize, it's not like, you know, a physical painting, right? Physical painting, you only have one and you can buy it as an item, sell it as an item, and that's one. But like, if you're a digital artist, like, Beeple, for example, Beeple's not going to be like a multimillionaire if NFTs didn't exist. Because to be honest, it's really hard to monetize a digital piece of art and say that that's that item that's mine, right? That ownership, that sense of ownership actually creates that value proposition. And I think NFTs are here to stay.
How does it work with NFTs? Because I know a bit that they're non-fungible tokens, but what is their intrinsic value?
So the thing is, it's the same as any kind of token. The intrinsic value is what you make it to be, how the market values it. I know a lot of traders that say like NFTs are just a scam, or like when you're actually buying into an NFT of an artwork or a collectible or a piece of land, there's always something related to it. There is something linked to it. If it's land on the metaverse, then it's the utility of that land very, very quickly. And you can basically what you can do with that land. For example, in crypto voxels, if you have land, then you can mint wearables. So you can mint avatars and then you can sell avatars, basically. Now, when you're talking about art, pure digital art, we tap into not only the market, not only the mechanisms of the market, but also the real world value of that item. If a Beeple artwork, a Beeple digital artwork actually has a value of like $1,000, then it has a value of $1,000 in the NFT world. The only difference is in the NFT world, you know who owns it. Without NFTs, it's just a JPEG or a PNG. So the way I explain it to a lot of people is that NFTs are actually just the certificate of ownership of a certain digital asset. Now, that certificate of ownership is what makes the value exist, basically. It's exactly the same as like a lot of people buying fine art. Of course, they buy the fine art because of the art. But imagine someone taking a photo, a really high-res scan of the Mona Lisa and making a reproduction of the Mona Lisa. It would be high-class production, but it would still be a poster. The Mona Lisa itself is still owned by the Louvre. NFT world is exactly the same. Only it focuses on something that is, in our minds, easily copyable, right? JPEGs, PNGs, anyone can copy it. But you cannot copy that certificate of ownership because everyone agrees that that certificate of ownership gives that ownership to the person who owns it. And that can only be done with like the series of blockchains that we have now.
That's so interesting. And you say that you are an NFT curator. What does that mean?
So I run a gallery inside CryptoVoxels. It's called the Unique One Gallery. There's a lot of art that are, let's say, not very high quality. Some art are high quality and some art are not. So there needs, of course, to be a process of curation. Now, that process of curation, we're trying to make really decentralized. So we're trying to have the community side from like community discussions. Oh, this one's cool, this one's not, etc. It's like more towards that. And what rises to the top is the ones I select. So it's curation is something that is that needs to be done in a lot of NFT marketplaces, in my opinion. A lot of NFT marketplaces need curation but don't have it. I also host events in world. I set up events. I also built the gallery itself. And yeah, I help run the community as well.
Nice. Wow. This is like another level of interesting to me because like I love the idea of digital immutable art. I think it's just like really beautiful. And if I put my business hat on, like being able to buy like a share of a piece of art and being an investor, a stakeholder deciding its future, it's like another level of investing, which I think it will definitely go far. Because instead of investing in a company, you can actually invest in art with intrinsic value, with ownership. And you don't have to worry about cash flows, HR, marketing, finances. It's like I think it's a more creative concept of investing. And being able to do that digitally through the blockchain, I think is just great. So everyone is trying to draw analogies from, let's say, the art world of the past to the world where we are now entering. And I know you were involved in the Burned Picasso project, and I think it definitely illustrates this transaction perfectly. But it's my understanding that you're involved, but can you tell us a bit more about it?
Sure. The Burned Picasso is actually an anonymous artist collective that actually burned the Picasso and then hosted the NFT at the Unique One marketplaces. So the Unique One is actually the marketplace where the NFT now resides. the Picasso was really burned. For those who didn't know, this is actually part of a print of Picasso, some of Picasso's prints that are still in, it was in a museum in Denver. It was exhibited there. We burned it, physically burned it, to move it into NFT. So basically, there's an NFT representation of that burned object. Now, that burnt object is now immortal, you can say. Like, it's something that will always exist on the blockchain. There will be transaction histories. It's now on auction. You can actually buy a Picasso of your own. If you go to the Unique One marketplace, just go to unique.one, you'll basically find it. Of course, a lot of people has had comments regarding this. Some were saying that it's a dumb idea, you're destroying art, etc. But the way I see it is this. When you move a token from one blockchain to another, chain to chain, you burn the token on one side and then you mint the token on the other side. It's basically the bridge mechanism that every DeFi person knows. Now think of it as having reality being a chain as well. The Picasso has history, of course. The Picasso has, and we respect that. Once that's burned, it's moved over to NFT and then minted there, bridged there. It's sort of a physical to digital bridge. The new NFT carries the value of the old Picasso. And that value of the old Picasso becomes the value of the NFT. And think about it, it would last longer than the physical object itself. The physical object is printed on paper. If something happens to it, if it's damp, it gets destroyed, or it's simply because of wear and tear, we lose it. But like when you're actually putting that NFT in the blockchain, it'll last for however long the blockchain is going to last. And I'm thinking in terms of how we're doing it, even though there's a lot of evolution of blockchain technologies right now, blockchain is still going to be sort of a primary way for us to keep value. That means the Picasso would go into like the future metaverse of technology. So it made and preserved the Picasso and made it immortal.
And how do you actually bring the Picasso into the digital world? What kind of technologies do you use?
If you own the thing and you destroy it and mint it as digital, then you've moved it. It's been done by other artists as well. I think they're Googleable. There's several artists who actually just paint and then burn their painting. And then only the scan basically are sold as NFTs. And there are other people who are actually doing the same thing with a Banksy earlier in the year. Burnt Banksy work and then made it an NFT. So the sort of the idea of NFTs has really evolved into something that is just digital to something that can match the physicality of physical art. So because it matches, like as long as you destroy the original, the physical, then you can bridge it into the NFT and make that the original instead. It's all a matter of ownership.
Okay, it's all a matter of ownership. That's super interesting. Do you think that this kind of, like, they say, digital art will at some point overcome what we all know as physical art? So people, instead of going to museums, will go to blockchain museums or art galleries in the Web3, for example?
I think that is not something that will... So people would still prefer sort of the physicality of some art. A lot of people would still want to go to physical museums to see physical stuff. But I'm thinking the bridge between physical and digital will be blurry. Well, I've seen some exhibitions where there's a metaverse exhibition and there's a physical exhibition in multiple cities. And there are physical art that is brought to the physical exhibition, of course, with the representative inside the metaverse. And there's digital art that is brought into the physical with, like, you know, monitors on the walls, stuff like that. So it's sort of it's blurring the line between real and metaverse. Within the last, 18 months, 20 months, a lot of us are stuck at home because of the pandemic. A lot of people are looking into their screens and actually having a metaverse of their own, even though it's only Zoom or only like conversations like this. And they're realizing that the digital metaverse is very close to reality. Yeah, in the future, people would still go to find physical art, but that line would blur because physical art and like the metaverse, the virtual art would be like just one seamless whole.
I think I completely agree with that because I think it's with everything, right? I mean, we are seeing that people, for example, with music, music is also a great example, also with the ownership and with royalties and trying to, let's say, copy a music. We still go to concerts. We still, like, there's people that still buy, well, the discs, but we still listen to Spotify. I mean, I'm one of those. So with art, it's definitely like how it's going to evolve. So I completely agree with your opinion. One thing though, where did you learn all these super cool stuff about blockchain? It was in your work at IBM? Did you do a master? How did it go?
A lot of the things I did experientially. My basis is IT infrastructure. So I've always been interested in like networking. The consensus models of a lot of blockchains fascinated me. And that started with that. When I was at IBM, I also worked 1 year at IBM Labs. A lot of the cutting edge stuff are there. I do a lot of courses. I have a ton of courses, online courses. But like, yeah, I've never actually pursued formal education for blockchain. I think this is something a lot of people do now. A lot of the people I know, like the people who are like absolutely awesome geniuses basically at helping craft solutions and connecting solutions together. Like people who like used to work in oil and gas, for example, and is a civil engineer and has nothing to do with blockchain, but does his own research, for example. I think anyone can do it because right now we have Google. We have good projects that are searchable. All the documentation. So my mantra is always DYOR, do your own research. Doing that constantly really helps, and making that a mantra really helps.
Do you have a specific course that you would recommend, let's say for starters?
That's really hard. But like I started with the IBM blockchain course, which is available online for free. I think it's under Developer Works, or I don't know if they still put it under Developers, but like that's actually good because even though it's Hyperledger Fabric, but it goes to the meat of the problem, which is the business value. So connecting the business value that you're trying to seek with the blockchain solution or the blockchain technology. That's one. The other thing that you really need to watch is Andreessen Horowitz's A16Z Crypto Startup School. It's available online. Everything is free. Watch all of those videos. I think there are like 20 or 30 videos, a ton of videos. They really help in terms of actually getting to like more of the crypto side of things. But yeah, I would suggest you start with the IBM one simply to connect like, you know, the enterprise real world things with what blockchain can do, and then go to the Andreessen Horowitz stuff.
Thank you so much. I'm also like, I think same as you, I do my own research. I try to study blockchain because I love it. And of course, I'm very into this world of DeFi. And if I want to invest in DeFi, I need to understand it first. So that's a bit my background. But where can people find more about you, Decentricity?
Sure. You can follow me on Twitter, Decentricity, and on Instagram, Decentricity as well. On LinkedIn, I'm searchable as Decentricity. You can actually find me there. I'm trying to be more active on Twitter. If you're on Twitter, follow me on Twitter. And like, you know, there's a lot of things that, a lot of thoughts about the metaverse, a lot of thoughts about NFTs, a lot of thoughts about my current project, which is the Decentralized Bio Network as well. I can see you there. I also have a website. The website is Decentricity, which is Decentricity with a dot before the city. So Decentricity. Okay. So that's sort of how you type it in.
I'll make sure to include all of the links in the show notes. Don't worry about it.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for this, let's say, very insightful interview. I think you have been a great guest and I've definitely learned a ton. I think the audience will love you. I mean, it's super cool to understand all this technology and to see that someone is really bringing this technology into action. Like, kudos to you.
Thank you. I try. And hopefully everyone likes what I have to say, and I'd like to see every one of your audience online and interacting with me. I'll be in the metaverse.
A hell of an interview, right? I mean, I loved it. I'm just going to be 100% doing all those courses and making sure that I can bring that information to you in the next Get Skilled episode. Because who doesn't want to learn about blockchain and how the actual technology and the foundation of crypto works, right? I mean, if it's the future, we better get educated right now and not wait until everyone is already in the space and we are like the last ones. Anyways, I also want to thank everyone that bought me a coffee. Doing this project is a Say Yes to Fire show. It's been really, really insightful and nice for me. I love it, but sometimes it's hard with, well, my full-time job and everything. So I really appreciate your support buying me a coffee. If you want to buy me a coffee, you can go to buymeacoffee.com/sayyestofire and there you have it. You will support me with a bit of caffeine. Till next time.
You've been listening to the Say Yes to Fire podcast. Consider yourself enriched. For the latest, go to SusannaSayYes.nl. That's Susanna, SELLES.nl. We hope you've gotten some useful and practical information from the show. Make sure to like, subscribe, and share. Remember, sharing is caring. Till next time.